It's all here.
A no-hitter, grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment, every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Rob Schaefer, joined today by my colleagues Casey Johnson and Jason Goff. We'll talk a little NBA playoff basketball, talk about some potential finals matchups that we might see down the road, and break down each of our top five point guards in light of Chris Paul's pretty historic run this postseason. Later in the show, I'm joined by Bulls general manager Mark Eversley to talk about his recent selection to the board of directors for Canada Basketball, what that means for him and his career, and what to expect from them in the future.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
He already hit record.
Yep.
He already hit record.
I had to. Dude, Chris Paul's going to go to the NBA Finals? What?
Not if KC's Utah Jazz have anything to say about it.
I'm Milwaukee Bucks.
Stop. I rarely take victory laps early, and I reminded myself why I don't.
Really? Well, I mean, anybody who picked the Bucks can't take a victory lap on this if this is how it goes. One, yeah, because injuries suck.
Part of the game, man.
Yeah, but also, you know, is it something that maybe should have seen coming? I mean, Harden is, before this year, is about as durable as a superstar as there is, all things considered. So that's this nagging hamstring thing has been kind of new. But, and I guess the Kyrie play is a freak play, so it's not like they wore down. It's just a bummer.
Do you guys think Giannis should have? I mean, people are saying Giannis should have had a flagrant. What?
Well, people were giving the landing space argument. I've never seen anything like that, so I didn't really know how to think about it. But it looked to me like naturally boxing out, trying to get in rebound position. It didn't look nefarious to me.
He's going to get either rebound the ball or pull it out of the basket, right?
I believe I actually listened to the game on the radio, so I didn't see it until I saw the Twitter. We saw clips on Twitter after, but that's what it looked like to me.
How come nobody in the league called down and was like, hey, what are you guys doing with Jokic? Like, come on now, stop it. Rescind it. Now.
I was surprised by that. But that's the thing. I don't want to put myself in a box where I'm arguing like the rules should be selectively enforced based on external circumstances. It seemed to fit when they went through it, the bullet points of wind up, follow through, impact with the face, like it fit the textbook definition, but I don't know. The intent wasn't there to me. I mean, the other thing about that foul too, watching Nuggets games, he does that foul a lot. Like that frustration, like whether he doesn't get a call or something doesn't go wrong, he'll like kind of loosely, I guess, go to punch the ball out. And he picks up that foul a lot. And maybe this is what gets him to cut it out. Cause like, I mean, you can't get any worse than that in terms of poor timing.
And our boy Campaign did sell it.
Oh, he sold it. Yeah. He sold it. He got clipped though. He got clipped pretty good.
It looked like he got the ball to me
after the face, but yeah, he did get ball. That's why like intent to me, I would think would matter there. But if it so clearly fits the definition, I get it.
Would you want to be the ref that ejects the league MVP during the playoffs? Would you want to be that ref?
No, probably easier to do when they're down 3-0. I know who's arguing that swung the result of the series, you know, so. Mm-hmm.
But Suns are good, man. Suns are good.
Suns are great.
It's weird because they were an awful organization.
Yeah. But they hit. I mean, again, Chris Paul deservedly gets a lot of credit for it, but they were on their way. Not to this quickly, but, you know, Ayton's a hit draft-wise, whatever you think of the Luka thing, whatever. Like, he's a really good player. He's might get the max now, which is pretty amazing. Mikal Bridges, that's a hit. That's a good trade. Booker, I think, was always on his way to this. It's just like, you know, it has to happen on the national stage for people to actually notice it. Which is, I see a lot of Bulls fans connecting it to Zach stuff. And I kind of feel the same way, where it's like, I feel like if the Bulls can make a playoff jump, I'm not saying I'm not saying they're going to make the Eastern Conference Finals. Or I'm not saying he's Devin Booker, but I'm saying that's the next level of getting to that respect level, you know?
So are you saying the Bulls need is Chris Paul in NBA Finals?
There were people advocating
for what I heard
last offseason. There were people advocating for it last offseason. And I don't remember what my take was on it at the time, but I probably was, oh, it's a lot of money's in the twilight, limits their stand.
We got all the pieces. We got all the pieces Phoenix has. Zach LaVine is Devin Booker.
No, they don't.
Vooch is DeAndre Ayton.
Who's Mikal Bridges?
Patrick Williams is Mikal Bridges. We got all the pieces there.
I think you're a few years behind on Patrick White. I mean, let's revisit Patrick after a full offseason and see.
You saw him at that Bucks game snarling. You know what's brewing inside that man.
He's saying to Billy Donovan, "I can stop KD."
You know, like, I don't know what to do with that, because they put him on all the best players, and like, that's admirable that he wants to do it. But after a while, it's like, could you, you know, hold somebody to, like, you know,
but here's the thing though, like, there wasn't another option for a lot of these wing guys. Like, who else was doing it? So even though the results were mixed, probably to put it diplomatically at times, that Devin Booker game was, I think he called that one of his welcome to the NBA moments at his season presser, and it certainly looked like one at the first half of that game, at least. He really was the best option. So you kind of get the double benefit of developing him at the same time, but it's been a problem with this team. That's why, like, you shouldn't draft for positional need, but it was good to see them take a high potential, like, two-way, theoretically, defensive-minded wing, because this roster just hasn't had that for, I mean, how long?
Casey, did you get the reasoning behind their trip?
No. I mean, just, you know.
Go to a game.
Yeah, go. I mean, Van Gundy, Breen, and Mark Jackson were at the Cubs game on Saturday. It's like just off day and game, interesting game close by. Here we go.
I almost went. I was in Milwaukee yesterday. I almost went, and then I pulled up the resale tickets, and they were like $450 each.
My brother and my dad want to go, and my cousin. They want to go.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. You should hit up Billy D, man.
Well, if I knew, but the standing room tickets were like 130, 140, but I was like, I don't know if I'm going to do that.
I'll contact Bobby Poe for you.
Bobby Portis, he was flying around yesterday. He looked great. I watched the first quarter, and then I had to watch listen to the rest of it on the radio, but
let's go. Bobby Portis, baby.
All right. Is that the pod? We're done. Bobby Poe, let's go.
So, Jason, you missed. The Bulls are Phoenix East Coast. All they need is Chris Paul. They're going to the finals.
I think Tony comparing Nikola Vucevic to DeAndre Ayton was
a high. There you go. There is a
yeah. You know, Zach is his book.
Yeah, similar games. Yeah.
Chris Paul. We're all good. Chris Paul will get you to the finals. That's his free agent plug right there. I will get you to the finals.
What about all the other evidence, though? what about the previous 15 years of evidence that that's not the case? But, you know, it's a crazy year in the West. Listen, I love basketball, but I just had the most ridiculous thing happen to me this year. This year. I got locked out of my crib just now because I tried to run downstairs and get something before the pod. And then I pretty much had to break into my own home just now.
And they did
running around.
I'm not going to ask you
how you did that. No, they're coming. They're coming. Don't worry. They're coming. Shout out to the
– I'm already in here. That's me. Yeah. It's my picture right there.
Hey, this guy broke into this house and hung up pictures of himself all over the place. Oh my God, I hate my life, and I hate the NBA right now because none of this is working out the way it's supposed to. I don't want to watch Milwaukee in the finals, dude.
Come on!
What? Listen. You can keep your objective pants on all you want. I did not sign up this year to watch Giannis Antetokounmpo and Drew Holiday in the game's most magical stage. I didn't. I need everyone to be healthy that I wanted to see in the finals. Okay, that it's as simple as that for me. People are gonna. I know we're gonna get to what the Utah versus Phoenix final. I mean, Utah versus Milwaukee or Milwaukee versus Phoenix. But this is not. This ain't it. Like for us, it's it. This it for us. But y'all don't know. Well, you know. First, I'll ask Casey, Rob, Tony. Do you guys have to watch the games with casual fans or people who don't watch basketball? Casey, your family has pretty much understood what you've done since you were like 5 years old. So you don't have, like, there's nothing new happening on your end. You got a beautiful family. Rob and Tony, these are questions more for you guys. If you have to explain this game to somebody, do you want to do it without LeBron and KD and Kyrie Irving and James? Like, I'm having to explain stuff about basketball. Like, my lady is not a big basketball fan, actually not a big sports fan at all. And in the midst of explaining who, you know, Donovan Mitchell is, as opposed to explaining LeBron and AD, and like, it's making my life very tough. Because, Giannis is Giannis, right? But explaining why Giannis is Giannis, like, it would have been much easier for me if LeBron James and Anthony Davis were still in these playoffs. It'd be much easier for me, I don't know, if Brooklyn was all healthy. It's going to be fun for me because I love basketball. But y'all can't, Rob, you can't act like the rest of the world is chomping at the bit to see Chris Middleton go up against Mikal Bridges. You can't. It's not possible.
Slander. I don't have to watch with too many casual, just because, you know, you run in circles just with diehard either basketball fans or other media people or whatnot. I find it, I always find something enough interesting when I'm explaining this stuff, and sometimes eyes do glaze over, I guess, but I find it pretty easy to explain why the Giannis kind of arc that Milwaukee is on right now is compelling. A guy who invested his prime years in a small market team and is kind of paying back the loyalty that they showed him to bring him over and develop him as a player. And he talks a lot about how that organization has done a lot for his family. And then they return the favor by investing a lot in him to trade for Drew Holiday and build a team that, is championship quality or could be. I mean, these series still aren't over yet. And the bummer is the injury factor. That's the worst thing for me to have to explain. But I think you could find a compelling angle for almost all these teams. I mean, Phoenix, like, they're this team that's on this meteoric rise. We were talking about before you came on, Goff, just like, not only has the Chris Paul thing been amazing, and Chris Paul's a big name, maybe not, I don't know what if he's a household name with casual fans, but
he is because of commercials, you know.
Yeah.
The State Farm campaign has done wonders for him. Like, these dudes are names, but like, when the stars aren't performing or the stars are hurt, it's interesting for me to watch it through somebody else's eyes, because I know that guy is a different connection, is a different feeling than the tell me why I should know this guy, especially when we're at this stage. We're not talking about the first round, right? Like, you know, we've been, LeBron James has either spoiled or ruined a lot of people's perceptions on what greatness and sustainable success is. This dude has been going to finals since he was a child, and he's missed a couple along the way, damn near. And him not being in it is, you know, it's a factor. Like last night, watching the Denver game, I could not believe they threw Nikola Jokic out, right? But I'm explaining it to my lady, like, yeah, their second best player towards ACL, Jamal Murray. No, you haven't heard of him. Nikola Jokic is the MVP. Can't believe they just threw his ass out of a game for trying to break campaign's nose. No, you haven't heard of either one of those people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's different when it's not local and it's not really on the national stage for a casual fan too. So I'm enjoying the hell out of it. Don't get me wrong. I'm watching it. I would like some game sevens, you know, at some point. Would it be fun to have to watch somebody really, really, truly get eliminated? We only, how many game sevens have we had this playoffs?
One.
Like, maybe one.
Yeah.
Like the stars not being there and it not being, oh, look at this team. They're going to triple overtime two games in a row. Like those things, it's, I'm just saying, it's just interesting for me in my current, you know, situation where I'm watching a game and I'm like, oh yeah, this is who this is and this is who that is, and a lot of the key principal players aren't there, and the series haven't come down to we got to get home because this is the last game between this series and it's going to be a barn burner.
You know what, Jason? That's the weird thing about the game within the game in terms of the business of the NBA is. They all want an equal opportunity to win a championship, obviously. But they all, the owners, are obviously thinking business too. And if it's not prudent or better for business for the team that I own to make it to the NBA Finals and it's better for my pocket, I'm pretty sure that thought has to come across. Like, not saying they would want to not make the NBA Finals if they're a small market team, obviously. But the thought has to come across, especially with Adam Silver, like, if we're being real, those ratings aren't going to be good in the finals. Like, they're not. And they're, we're going to look at it and we're going to overanalyze and we're going to enjoy it because we enjoy the game. And I love the chess match of the playoffs, but yeah. I got to be real. Those ratings aren't going to be good when the finals come around.
And the ratings have been dropping over the last few years just because not enough people are watching. Well, not as many people are just watching TV anymore. Like the cord cutting and how NBA content is consumed, I think is different, and I could be wrong, but I believe is different than any other sport. I think the NBA, what it is to social media and how kids and guys like us as well consume the sport in terms of highlights and these content factories, a lot different than plopping down for 2 hours and 15 minutes and watching two cities go at it that you don't have ties to. So yeah, the ratings I think might be down again because of the star factor, because of some of the cities that are involved. And also they've just been going down, but the consumption of the product I think is different and can be quantified differently. It's just, it's interesting that when those things that you think you're tired of aren't there anymore, how the rest of the world reacts. I'm not tired of seeing LeBron James on the grandest stage, right? Like the beginning of this year, I signed up for LeBron and Anthony Davis going up against the three dudes in Brooklyn who clicked up so that LeBron and Anthony Davis wouldn't win another one, and they would, right? Right now, we got one team that's not even in it anymore. And then you got the other team who got two guys who are down. Yeah, it's compelling, but it's also, you know, I think unlike football where the spectacle of the final event outweighs everything because it's a holiday and it's because, you know, football is a religion. And when you get to baseball, you know, that civic pride rings true. But if your team ain't in it, you see those numbers do what they do, right? Sox fans know the least watched World Series damn near in the history of television was Sox versus Houston. I'm happy that it happened, but I know how it was received. So, yeah, as a fan of the game and as a fan of people learning about the game, this is going to be one where you get put to the test if you're like one of us and you're like, oh, this is what this person does, because there's not the household name factor is important no matter what we think. I think it is important. And that's why these series matter, because it's not one game elimination where you get the best guys up out of here. You got to beat them four times. It's like the meetings are supposed to happen this way. It's just with injuries and, you know, a topsy-turvy type of season coming off a real weird season, it's just interesting to consume it this way. KC, like, you've covered, you know, years of NBA basketball. So this, you know, objectively speaking, Yeah, we're going to watch everything, but does it feel different to you? Like, we're getting ready to watch Western Conference Finals and Eastern Conference Finals with some unusual suspects.
Yeah, it definitely feels different in the sense that it's new blood, new teams, some smaller markets. But I would posit that there's still enough kind of crossover individual stars that there's going to be at least decent intrigue. I mean, KD is still around for the Nets. Giannis is a worldwide, you know, one name superstar. Joel Embiid, because of his marketing appeal, maybe not quite that level, but close. And then Chris Paul, just because of his, you know, State Farm commercials or whatever. There's still enough, you know, it's not quite the LeBron level, but there's still enough crossover appeal to me that I'm hopeful that the ratings won't be as bad as maybe you guys are thinking. I do have one. Yeah, and I do have one clarifying question for Rob. When you said that you had an easier sell for this than you might imagine, but your friend's eyes do glaze over at times, is that when you're explaining Chris Middleton's point per possession catch and shoot opportunities? Or no, as the official president of the Chris Middleton fan club, I just need to clarify.
There's a lot of things that I go to down the rabbit hole on that. Yeah, gotta glaze over. Yeah. Oh, we'll leave it at that.
What percentage of those involve Chris Middleton? Would be like,
No. They glaze over when he gets into the Kyle Lowry, you know, trade machine or obviously. Yo, this is another thing. Read Rob's piece about the fits at point guard for the Chicago Bulls and his tiers of pie in the sky guys and probable dudes. And if you haven't read it, go to NBCSportsChicago.com. Rob Schaefer doing good work as always, and my man Casey Johnson as well. But dude, I'm reading some of those names. I'm like, all right, it's, you know, the pie in the sky ones are hilarious to me because those are all the dudes that Bulls fans want. Those are all the dudes that Bulls fans think are going to be Bulls point guards in the near future. But I appreciated the piece, man, for breaking it down, not only for people like us, but people who really want to understand what this free agent market is sizing up to, especially at such an important position with Kobe White's injury factoring in.
Yeah, I think there are options at point guard in a way that there aren't at some of the other positions. The factors, though, that will decide who and if the Bulls are able to go after guys that people might like are, one, the cap space equation, which we've beaten to death on this podcast. How much are they willing to part with in terms of the veteran depth? How much of a swing are they willing to take to get into the, you know, low 20s to mid $20 million in cap space if you want like a high level starter type guy? And then there's also the factor of, and I include this for all the guys that it applies, like a Spencer Dinwiddie, for example, is a guy who I think would be a great fit. There's a lot, I mean, for him to even hit the market, he has to A, decline the player option that he has for next season. He has to think that it's more beneficial to him to hit the open market now and try to get some long-term security, maybe a bigger role. He's also coming off a partially torn ACL. So like that's just one example. Like these aren't all guys that are, you know, guaranteed to be on the Bulls radar or be serious candidates, but the point of the piece was to kind of take the temperature of what names are out there and who to watch. I mean, some of these guys are playoff guys. Obviously the veteran trio that I highlighted, we've talked about, I think each individually, maybe except for Kyle Lowry on this podcast, but Mike Conley and Chris Paul too. These are high dollar figure guys. These are a veteran, you know, I think Conley's 33, Lowry 35, Chris Paul turning 37 soon or 36. So, you know, these are guys that are, you wonder if they're looking for more of a contending situation or a proven contending situation. You know, they're looking for, you know, a high dollar amount because of their reputation and how much they've been around the league and how much they've won and proven themselves on every stage they could. So, you know, those guys are out there. Like, they're certainly worth keeping an eye on if you're Bulls fans. I see them as unlikely, but we'll see. And then, you know, the names at the bottom of kind of the fallback options, those are guys we've run through on this podcast a couple times. If you've listened to, you know, a couple episodes back, the TJ McConnells, the Derrick Roses, and this is not to disrespect any of these guys, but you know, I think I put Goran Dragic in there, Ish Smith. These are all just off the top of my head, but kind of the veteran guys that could be a starter in a stopgap type situation, could be filling out a three guard rotation, but somebody that's going to help fortify your depth there. Because, you know, as I put at the top, point guard was going to be the most talked about position this offseason for all the struggles that the Bulls had with turnovers, with late game execution, with depth at the position. That it was going to be a topic of conversation no matter what, the Coby White injury and the rehab process and his status for the start of the season being uncertain only puts a spotlight on that more. So I think it's going to take a lot for the Bulls to get into, you know, serious consideration in terms of cap maneuvering for a lot of these guys, but it's not a hopeless or a super dire situation at this point, because I think there are options out there that don't exist for other positions as much, you know, namely like small forward. Like, I don't think there are as many options there as at point guard necessarily. So, you know, maybe the Bulls need and value or, you know, a productive player can align and they can make an addition that's going to make an impact next season. Cause you know, we've talked about ad nauseum, the need for them to make a big, big leap next season. It's going to take internal improvement, but it might also take an external guy or two coming in as well.
No doubt. Is this the point where we talk about Chris Paul in the same way that everybody's been talking about him over the last couple of years? Not even a couple of years, especially a couple of weeks. So Chris Paul.
Look at our rankings. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah. Chris Paul has been a topic of conversation because of how he's transformed this Phoenix organization. You saw what he did for Oklahoma City the year before, and people are asking that greatest point guard of all time question. I, for one, think it's absolutely fucking ridiculous. Listen, man, I'm not going to allow this to happen. I know I was born in 1980, so I got to see some years at the end of this man's career, but I remember what grown men were doing and saying when Magic Johnson was in his prime. And for anybody, I don't care, YouTube, what was it, Internet Explorer, DOS, whatever vehicle you need to use to get on the internet to see what a 6'9" player did at that position before his time. Huh?
Ben Simmons. We got it.
Cut the shit, Tony. Don't let me finish. Don't
stop
playing. I don't give a shit if that's my man or not. There's only one point guard, and then there's everybody else. And it's going to be that. And I will say this. He and Magic Johnson, probably at his position, has the most sizable gap from one to the rest of y'all than anybody else at his at a position.
Interesting.
Pick your shooting guard and see who has it, you know.
Well, who do you have two then behind Jordan at shooting guard?
I mean,
all time.
The trendy thing is to go Kobe, right? Because, you know, yeah. Kobe is the most recent version of greatness or close to that greatness as we'll ever see, right? You, Magic Johnson and then Isaiah Thomas or all these other – and shout out to Isaiah Thomas because I think Isaiah Thomas is the second best point guard to ever play the game of basketball, including Steph Curry. I do. Isaiah Thomas eliminated.
Oh, I wish people could see the faces on.
That's fine. They can. Hey, you know,
I wish.
I will take several photos of this YouTube, of this pod that we're doing so that we can capture all the faces. Isaiah Thomas eliminated some of the greatest players of all time before Mike got on his run, including Mike. Okay, and he was the undoubted best player on that team. So we could play these John Stockton, Steph Curry, you know, I've only been watching basketball for 10 years games all we want. Isaiah Thomas is the second best point guard of all time. Then you get to the Steph Currys and those conversations right there. But, you know, where are you putting Pistol Pete Maravich, right? Like, you putting him at point guard, you putting him at shooting guard for this new – era of NBA basketball. I love Chris Paul, but very recently I was like, yo, Chris Paul gonna have to win something before we continue to, you know, like we talk about greatest of all time at that position or at any position. Give me top five at any position and let's not talk about the scrutiny of what they have or haven't won. Chris Paul has been on some damn good teams. He's been on some damn, those Clippers teams weren't ass, right? Those teams were damn good. They couldn't take their cool off when it was time to play against, you know, some really tough squads like the Memphises of the world and that kind of shit. But Chris Paul, for years, for me, has been, man, I understand how great this dude is. Sure hope he wins something before it's over so it can all, you know, because post-Jordan, that's all we do. If you don't win a championship, then you can't be in this pantheon of great players, which I hate as it is. I don't like that at all. But if we're gonna go by these rules, you know, no pun intended, we're gonna go by these post Jordan rules. The celebration, there's a lot of dudes who should be celebrated ahead of him. No, I mean, Steph Curry changed basketball. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Thomas. All the Bulls fans dried up tears that came out again during the Last Dance made people kind of like hate Isaiah. Remember why you hate him. You don't hate the bums. Like we love Mark Price, right? Like we love, you know, the Johnny Dawkins of the world. We love the Sidney Moncriefs of the world. We love the dudes who Jordan used to kick their ass every single playoffs or every single regular season. There's a reason why you don't like Isaiah Thomas as a Bulls fan. It's because of his greatness. Then you can get to all the other stuff about why you don't like him down the line. So Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas.
So you got Magic
and Isaiah, one and two.
And then you got Steph and then
I'll throw Steph in there.
All right. So now I've been quietly waiting here. What position do you have Oscar Robertson?
Ooh.
Yeah, he's a point guard. And guess what? Oscar Robertson probably is gonna have to nudge his way in there ahead of Chris too. Listen.
There's no nudging there. He might, I'm with you on Isaiah. I've got Isaiah in my top five, but I've got Oscar Robertson number two behind Magic. I've got Oscar Robertson.
And then I don't care what you say. I know he won a championship at the end of his career, and was an integral part of this championship run too. But everybody's acting like Jason Kidd didn't just play basketball very recently.
He's on the list. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we're actually more in agreement than disagreement because I've got Chris Paul behind a lot of these guys. So
I know we would be in agreement. I'm talking about the people who have been just vaulting lists out there in a season that, you know, yeah, this is a great season for Chris Paul and the Phoenix Suns. It doesn't make me forget the first 6 or 7 years in New Orleans /Charlotte. Doesn't make me forget the Clippers run where I will never forget when they made that acquisition. And Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan was like, you know, they made up the term lob city on social media. And I was like, this is going to be a new phenomenon because these dudes finally have a point guard. The West is going to be in trouble. And what happened? The West kicked their ass. Every single year, found a way to find a boot in their ass every year. And it wasn't like, oh, he's so close. And then the injuries started happening at the end. And then he switched teams and then he went to Houston. He went to Oklahoma City. And, you know, I love Chris Paul. I do. He's come a long way from punching Julius Hodge in the nuts in ACC tournament games. Okay. He's a Hall of Famer, surefire Hall of Famer, one of the best point guards of all time. But we need to chill because a very short while ago, people were like, man, that playoff door seems to get slammed on Chris Paul every single season. For you to be the greatest point guard or for you to be one of the greatest point guards of your generation, like these are the standards that all the other positions are held to. And for whatever reason, you know, like, it's kind of like what Dame Lillard is going through, I think, right now. It's like, all right, you great. But at some point, I know it's a lot to ask, but at some point, you're going to have to do something more than we thought you would do.
And we should also add here that this all spawned from Nuggets coach Michael Malone in his press conference saying Chris Paul is arguably, the key word that he uses, arguably the greatest point guard of all
time. That's a bad argument. That's a dumb argument.
That's an 0-4, just got swept in the second round of the playoffs argument.
Right.
Look, Chris Paul is obviously you know, probably going to be a future Hall of Famer. Arguably one of the greatest point guards, or, you know, in the discussion, but he doesn't make my top five. Mm. Rob, you've been very quiet. Who's your top five?
Well, I have a policy for discussions such as these where I only speak on what I was alive for. Because
go back to Derrick Rose's rookie year. Is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say that I have Steph Curry. I would have Steph Curry all time pretty considerably ahead of Chris Paul. I wouldn't think twice about it. And then for Big O, for Isaiah, I truthfully don't know, because I can do the numbers. I can do the accolades. I mean, the thing that's been interesting about Isaiah is watching people nitpick, you know, how those Pistons teams never had an all-NBA guy and nitpicking like all-star appearances and things like that. It's like, one, the context of the league changed in terms of just like how many all-NBA teams there are. And I don't know, man. I don't know how much I trust without having the broader context of having watched him over a span of years and not just, you know, grainy NBA TV footage every now and then. I don't know that I'm the right, you know, judge, jury, and executioner to like judge where these guys are all time. So you call it cowardice, you can call it humility, whatever you want to call it. But I could speak to Steph Curry in my eyes being pretty significant. I mean, I wouldn't think twice about that. And then I would imagine Chris Paul would make my top five if I really sat down and mapped it out, which I haven't done. But yeah, Oscar, Isaiah, John Stockton. I mean, hasn't, you know, you mentioned him in passing, Goff, but I'm sure he would factor in here somewhere. Jerry West, more of a two. Is that, yeah. Am I right about that? So, you know, there's a lot of different names. It all spans eras. And I don't know what to make of the accolade argument, because I know I could put Steph Curry's two MVPs and his titles and all the things that he's accomplished in his career. I know I could put that in context because of how consistent this era has been. I also know I could put into context what he's done for that Warriors organization, which people my age and younger might not realize how unbelievable it is that the Warriors climbed to the prominence that they did.
And from the history of the game.
Yeah, Steph is the reason for that. Like, talk about an all-time culture builder. Like, that has a tremendous value too. And I say that to counter the, well, everywhere Chris Paul goes, he has an immediate impact and the team starts winning immediately. And that is valid and true, but there is something to, you know, bringing that organization the way that Steph did with the Warriors up versus like being the journeyman and going in and mercenary. I think there's value to both, but I would have Steph. That's all I feel comfortable speaking on. I don't want to order Oscar, Isaiah. I don't want Pistons Twitter after me. So,
well, I
guess yeah, Pistons Twitter don't even have internet. You good.
Dave Vernon Maxwell. Let me throw out a couple other names that we haven't even touched on. And Jason and Rob have only mentioned him in passing, and he's definitely on my top five. This is not one of the names I was going to throw, but we got to go a little into greater detail on John Stockton, because that's badass. But two names we haven't even mentioned yet: Steve Nash, two-time All MVP. Yeah. I mean, two-time league MVP. And then I know different.
Shaq has done more damage to a person's great career by talking about he should have won those MVPs instead of Steve Nash than any, like, nobody's MVPs kind of have been like taken from him more so. Like, we look back at those Steve Nash years, like, man, he's playing, you know, hockey on hardwood. And then Shaq was like, hey, by the way, go look at my numbers and tell me I wasn't better than that dude. So I'm with you on Nash though. Like, Nash gets slept on heavy. The Dallas Nash gets slept on.
Yeah.
Like, he was cold in Dallas.
I mean, we're just like casually talking about Chris Paul while barely acknowledging Curry and Nash, who both won two MVPs. Okay. You know, I know different era, smaller league and everything, but Bob Cousy, come on, man, MVP, 13-time All-Star. I mean, I would have Chris Paul probably ahead of him. I mean, because just of the context of the increased league, but he's got to be in that conversation too. So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 names without even getting to Paul. Magic, Isaiah, Stockton, Kidd,
it's Oscar, real.
Curry, real. Nash, Cousy. So, yeah. Chris Paul is not even in my top five. My top five, since I will put rankings on them, are Magic 1, Big O 2, Isaiah 3, Stockton 4, Steph Curry 5.
And it's not shade either, because if you're one of the top 10 to ever play a position, like, it's not shade. It's just let's be real. Like, let's bail ourselves out of moment jail and think about what we're really saying here. Like, he's – first of all, he hadn't even made it to the finals yet. Like, think – what all-time point guard you want to talk about that didn't go to a finals? Just –
Derrick Rose.
Huh?
Derrick Rose.
All right, Kendall. Take it easy, Kendall Schaefer.
No, I'm kidding. No, but yeah, and this is – I think I just looked this up. It's the second conference finals. You know, those Clippers teams never made it out of the second round. So
they got their ass whooped every year that I thought they were supposed to not get their ass whooped. And every year it was Blake Griffin's fault. It was Doc Rivers' fault. It was everybody's fault except for the general that everybody wanted to credit for getting them there. You know, like I watched that game last night. And I'm like, yeah, I even tweeted. I'm like, this, he is undoubtedly the best player in this series at 36 years old with a bunch of young boys running around, with an MVP running around on the same court. You know, like, he is out there killing everybody and doing it with ease. Like, the first couple minutes of that game where he got everywhere he wanted in the lane and passes were on point, like, everything was synchronized. And he had the ball on a string. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's going to be a long day for Denver, just like the previous three games. And on top of that, what he's doing, as we've seen, you know, in spells here in Chicago with Billy Donovan, is, you know, when the ball has that energy and it's moving and everybody wants to move it, it's a different game. It's an absolutely different game. Like, we watch Golden State do it and think, man, nobody's ever going to do it like that. It's because nobody's ever going to have those shooters. But if you have the energy in the basketball that this team has, or that any team that shares the ball with each other and does have guys who can finish, that's what it should look like. I guess it's beautiful to watch Phoenix play this way, because all the guys that you have to explain to the casual fans, like, why does that guy look so good? Because they're moving the ball. Because on a team where Devin Booker was asked to play point guard not too long ago, you see the difference. You see, okay, Devin Booker can now just be himself as the scorer. He can be himself as the mid-range jumper guy. He can be himself as the isolation guy. And he doesn't have a basketball personality that's going to ruffle anything if he's not in charge. Like, Devin Booker is the cool dude who just wants to get his 25 and help, right? And that's not a problem. They dropped a dude in there who needs to be in charge. Let's keep it funky. Everywhere he's gone, like, when he butt heads with James Harden, he needed to be in charge. He wasn't used to not being in charge. At the end of the Clippers thing, like, him and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, guys not getting along. Chris Paul needs this kind of squad. This is a perfect marriage for him. And Monty Williams has bestowed upon him all the leadership duties that a really good coach should. And at the end, with that embrace with Monty and Chris Paul, you could tell it was something other than basketball. It's like, yo, we gonna get each other to the points that we've wanted to get each other or get ourselves to, right? Monty's been there as a player, but he's gonna get there as a coach, and he's finally being recognized nationally as the coach he is. Chris Paul might make it to the finals. All this will have been worth it, right? This long journey, this long road. So, yeah, it's something poetic about last night's game as we're recording here on Monday. But Chris Paul, it's not crazy to cover him in totality. And sometimes I hate doing this when guys are flying high, but it's like, I'm not going to lie to you how I felt about him before this. I'm waiting for this moment, and I have been waiting for this moment for 9 years.
Yeah, when it's Chris Paul versus Joel Embiid for the title, you're gonna be in a pretzel.
No, I'm not. First of all, this for all you idiots on Twitter too. Stop acting like Tony, okay? Stop listening to things that you only want to hear. I have always said my expectations are higher for Joel Embiid because he should be Hakeem Olajuwon-esque, right? And this season he put it together. I'm happy to see it. You know, this season he stayed relatively healthy. I'm happy to see it. So if Chris Paul and Joel Embiid line up for the NBA title, I will be rooting for Doc Rivers and Ben Simmons, ladies and gentlemen. Go Sixers.
Speaking of Sixers, one other point guard name, and I would have Chris Paul ahead of him, Allen Iverson. We did not mention AI.
Ooh, so what do you do with Allen? Is he a shooting guard? Is he a point guard? Where does he fit higher if you slot him into each one? Because if you solely look at Allen Iverson as a point guard, he is skyrocketing up that list. If you solely look at him as a shooting guard, I think he's going to be somewhere where he's generally ranked, probably somewhere in the top 10, lower half of the top 10, if I'm not mistaken. And again, that's an amazing thing. But if you show me 27 points a game and you say, I took this team to the finals, I'm an MVP, right? I think you're going to get higher. Because let's face it, too, as you guys mentioned, the way the game's changed, you know, to be a point guard MVP candidate, that meant something because that like guys didn't score 23, 22. I remember guys older than me, my dad's friends and my dad telling me, I don't like Allen Iverson because that's not what a point guard's supposed to do. You're supposed to hit free throws. You're supposed to get the team set up, hit open jump shots, play good defense. And if you get your 15, 16, there you go. Allen Iverson came through at 6 foot nothing, 100 and nothing, scoring 27 points a game, and old heads lost their minds. So, you know, where would you slot him at? That'd be a fun question as well. But, the Chris Paul thing is fun to watch because I've never not liked him, and I could see how people don't like him. I'm just waiting for it, and maybe we're getting it right now in a year.
Who else has a nickname Point God, though? They don't get that to Magic or
anybody. Hey, guess what? Guess what? That ain't his nickname, though. Knock that off. That's very recent, too. Listen, we got to stop this, man. We have to stop this, okay? Y'all going to make me hate on Chris Paul, and that's what it sounds like I've been doing for 10 minutes. Stop this. If Magic Johnson – did Magic Johnson play basketball? We got to stop this, man. We have to stop this. Like, stop playing around. Early Magic, middle of the road Magic, Magic's moments after. Like, we have to see. Siri is mad at me because I'm screaming about Magic Johnson. We can't dishonor the legends like that when everybody's making all these dumbass Mount Rushmore. By the way, stop making Mount Rushmores. Listen, for more than a decade, I have abhorred anyone who's like, oh, what's your Mount Rushmore for this? I don't have a Mount Rushmore. First of all, Mount Rushmore isn't the four greatest anything. Mount Rushmore is just four old white dudes' heads on a mountain. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not the four greatest presidents of all time. You know, like, what are we doing? Everything doesn't have to be a Mount Rushmore. And if it's a Mount Rushmore with those stipulations, guess whose face ain't on there? Chris Paul. And he knows it. Magic Johnson ain't better than Chris Paul. What are we doing? I almost turned off the internet when I read that. I was going to find a way. I was going to hit Al Gore up and be like, yo, how do you turn this invention off? The hell out of here. What else we got, Rob? Shit. I had to damn house to talk about Chris Paul being the greatest point guard of all time because of Tony and his bullshit. I saw that text on the text thread. I didn't even respond. When you and Tony started talking to each other, I'm like, you know what? This ain't for me. This is when the young dudes get together. I'm gonna stay out of this one. It's Chris Paul, the greatest point guard of all. Slap yourself. Man, what? You turn on, we got YouTube, man. You can go back and watch Secretariat run. You can't go back and watch Magic Johnson's rookie year in the NBA Finals game one. Stop playing with me. Yeah, stop it, man. We just disrespectful. We don't like honor anything. If it happened right now, it has to be the greatest. And I feel like the old dude saying that, but come on, man. And on top of it, like, look at the dudes who are playing right now. Like, is there anybody right now in the game that you guys think is going to challenge that greatest point guard of all time, mantle?
No.
Break into that top five.
No.
You guys who are like 26, well, 27 or younger.
Yeah. Well, the point guard is interesting because, like, Luka, I wouldn't call him a point guard. He's like a heliocentric, like, playmaking forward type, almost like LeBron-ish. Yeah. But I mean, I think he's on a trajectory to be an all-time player already. Run through off the top of my head. I mean,
Ja.
That's what I was going to say. But Ja's got, you know, obviously, but if anybody got the skills, you know, like the measurables and the athleticism and all the other stuff that you need in today's game. Like, who are the best point guards in today's game, and how many of them are young players?
I mean, all time, we didn't talk about Westbrook. I'm not sure where I'd have him in this hierarchy, but he's in this conversation when you start going, you know, top 10 all time. You know, maybe not at the top of the league anymore, except for this that push they had at the end of the season. We're probably overreacting if we float LaMelo Ball's name here. Right?
Bulls Twitter wouldn't think you were overreacting.
No, I guess not.
John Morant, but I mean, you're talking about young. I mean, just
yeah. We mentioned, yeah. So.
And then we'll see. I mean, we'll see what these guys look like in this draft coming up. And there's a way to allude to the fact that the lottery is a week from today, as you guys are listening to this, and the Bulls will maybe get their 20% chance at one of these guys. But, you know, we'll see how that's a nice segue, right? But we'll see how the hype culminates and how it plays out with guys like Cade and Suggs and things like that. I'm not going to make any grand declarations, but this draft class right now is talked about as being a historically great one. So it'd be interesting to see if any of them break into this discussion.
Yeah, I hope so, man. That's why this game is cool, is because whenever you think you've seen the greatest, or whenever you think you've seen
Trey,
you know, a mutant in terms of a player or a position, or, you know, a transformative talent, there's somebody watching him, and that somebody is trying to get it as good, if not better. Like, for instance, he may not register on the professional basketball fan scene or the Bulls fan scene, but a kid, Amari Bailey, who is at Sierra Canyon right now, who I've watched for most of his young career when he was here in Chicago, because went to high school with his mom, so that makes me feel super old. Like, there are kids who are coming out now who I remember when Russell and Derrick Rose were changing the game in terms of athleticism at the position, and now half of these kids play like that. So it's always fun to watch kids see, okay, point guards are dunking all the time. I got to be able to do this. This has to be in my game. A floater has to be in my game. So it's fun to watch that. What else we got? What else is up next, Tom? Where would you like us to go? Orchestrator of basketball discussion.
Well, I think we kind of went over everything on the list.
All right. Well, I'm out. I'll go fix my door and try to figure out how to tell the police that this is my home.
you could present the Mark Eversley interview that's going to play after this.
Oh, listen, you guys don't know what you're about to be in for, because the young goat and one of the architects of the Chicago Bulls are going to come your way in a matter of moments. Mark Eversley, general manager of the Chicago Bulls, and Rob Schaefer of NBCSportsChicago.com are going to sit down in a mere matter of moments, because that's how this editing thing works. Rob, I want to thank you ahead of time for the great work that you have done that these people are about to hear.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are joined today by Bulls general manager and a recent selectee on the board of Canada Basketball, Mark Eversley. Mark, we really appreciate you taking the time. Well, I'm sure things never slow down for you all over there. How are things going? How is the quote-unquote offseason treating you so far?
It's been good. You know, we shut the office down for a couple of weeks. at the end of the regular season, we wanted people to go home and just kind of take a deep breath and, you know, get to know their families again and, you know, just kind of like download a little bit and, you know, enjoy life. You know, it was a tough season in that, you know, there were tons of protocols and COVID and restrictions. So, you know, we felt it was really important that people got to go back home and relax and chill a little bit. And we opened up the office a couple of weeks ago and, you know, we've been in here kind of grinding away, looking towards, you know, the lottery, the draft, and then, you know, free agency. So we're kind of getting back into the swing of things.
Got it. And things that are very compelling and topics for a future date, there'll be plenty of time to discuss all that. But today I wanted to get into it a little bit with you. I was curious about, you know, the recent news. I mentioned it at the Open, I broke last week that you're a recent selectee. Is it election based? I actually don't know, to the board of directors of Canada Basketball. How does that process go about?
So I was actually exploring, you know, joining a board prior to the folks at Canada Basketball reaching out to me. I had interviewed for the COC, so the Canadian Olympic Committee, about potentially joining their board, and unfortunately it didn't go my way. But what came of that was they made a recommendation to Canada Basketball that they reach out to me and see if I was somebody who they'd be interested in working with. And I know the chairman of board, we're longtime friends. We go back, his name is Brian Cooper. He reached out to me and, you know, suggested that maybe I think about, you know, coming on board and joining the Canada Basketball board, you know, and, you know, we went through a small little interview process, met with him and talked to a few other people who are actually on the board now and, you know, felt like it was a pretty good fit. Got the word last week that, you know, I was nominated and accepted. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what that might bring, not only for myself, but also for, you know, Canada Basketball and the youth around Canada. So,
yeah. So what do you expect from the gig in terms of a duties and responsibilities standpoint?
Honestly, unclear. But I'm approaching this with a complete open mind. You know, from talking to Brian, they're looking for somebody who brings basketball expertise to the table. And I think I certainly bring that, especially from a Canadian perspective. You know, I've got over 20 years of front office experience and working in an NBA organization. I've played the game, not at a very high level, but I did play the game, so I understand the game a little bit. So I think they're looking for another basketball voice on the board and somebody who actually understands the intricacies of, you know, what it means to, you know, not only one work in the NBA, but, you know, work in a pretty high level environment. And I think there's a ton of things I can bring to the table when called upon.
And your ties to Canada too are well documented. You know, correct me if I get anything wrong on the chronology here, but you moved to Toronto from London when you were young. Spent part of your childhood in Toronto, part of it in Brampton, and obviously begin to play basketball and begin yourself on that path. I was wondering if you could just describe what it was like for you growing up in Canada, making those moves, and when basketball kind of jumped into the equation for you, how the love for that game sparked as you were growing up.
Sure. Yeah, like you said, I was born in London, England. You know, I moved to Canada when I was four. I grew up in an area of the city called Jane and Finch, and, you know, pretty rough neighborhood. To be honest, you know, moved out to Brampton, which is where, you know, I call home now. And that's where my father is. And that's really where I was introduced to the game of basketball. You know, I am 6'8". So I started to grow at a pretty young age and, you know, kind of got thrust into the game. And that's really where, you know, I credit Brampton and Cardinal Leisure. That's where I went to high school as, you know, the place where I really fell in love with the game, you know. In and around that time, you know, the Raptors and the Grizzlies came into, you know, they joined the NBA and, you know, I set sights on one playing in the NBA. But before I had to do that, you know, the path to the NBA or working in the NBA was really down south, and that being the United States. So, you know, that's really where I developed my love for the game and my passion for the game. You know, I still call it home. Most of my best friends are still right there in little Brampton, Ontario, Canada. And I'm proud to say that I'm from there.
You mentioned having NBA aspirations. I think anybody that grows up with sports at any level has that dream of playing at the next level. You end up making it closer than most. But when did that transition kind of happen for you when you realize, okay, I still want to be deeply embedded in basketball, but I'm going to have to take this new route. When did that happen for you, and what kind of centered your focus on that?
I think it was probably midway through my junior season. And, you know, I'd gotten a couple looks from a couple. My coach told me, you know, there's a couple scouts coming to watch you tonight. And I was like, wow, that's like unbelievable. And, you know, I think when you're in Canada and you have visions or sights of playing in the NBA, when I was kind of coming up and I actually got to, you know, go to the U.S. and play, you know, at a, not a high level, but, you know, a fairly high level, you know, you kind of realize somewhere along the way that you're good, you're probably pretty good, but you're probably not going to be an NBA draftee. You know, I could have gone and played overseas if I wanted to, but I chose not to do that. You know, growing up, I promised my parents that if I did go to university, that I'd get my degree. So I really put all my effort, most of my efforts into making sure I graduated and got a degree. You know, basketball is something that I've always, you know, wanted to play at a high level, but, you know, I thought if I'm not going to play at a really high level, I might as well try, have aspirations to work either for the NBA as, you know, the association, or work with an NBA team. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to catch on with Nike after graduating. And, you know, that kind of charted my path, you know, being exposed to, you know, camps and all-star games and Final Fours. And, you know, I was always rooted and connected in the game. And, you know, fortunately, I've ended up where I am today.
As a quick sidebar, if I asked you to scout yourself from back in the day, how would you describe your game as you were coming up?
Man, that's a good question. I think I was one of the original stretch fours.
All right.
You know, I could shoot it pretty good. You know, I rebounded it okay. I wouldn't say that I was great off the bounce, but you know, catch and shoot, I could knock him down with the best of them.
It sounds like you just missed your era then by a couple years, but
and a whole lot of money, perhaps.
There you go. I'm glad you mentioned the Nike Canada thing. I wanted to ask about that. I knew that was kind of your first foray out of school. How did that come about? What are the enduring memories from that experience for you? Because obviously you do that, you go on to work for the Raptors later in life, kind of deepening the ties basketball wise between you and Canada.
So kind of a funny story, you know, graduate from college, go back home, living with your parents and looking for a job. Right. And, you know, back then there were these things called newspapers, and I was just kind of flipping through the newspapers, through the classifieds, and I saw an advertisement for the Nike swoosh. And I was like, what the heck is this? Applied for the job, really like not knowing what I was applying for. And it ended up being a job at a Nike retail outlet store. The first ever in Canada, actually. Applied for the job, got the job. And it was in a town called Cookstown, Ontario. That's really where I started my professional career. And I was the floor supervisor in charge of managing a staff of about 60 people and kind of managing, you know, the schedule and staffing and helping run the things out on the floor. And that was really, you know, my first, you know, entry point into working and managing people and starting to build relationships. And, you know, that's really the foundation of who I am, is somebody who's, you know, understands and values relationships, and was able to parlay that into working in the head office at the time in sports marketing. I became the sports marketing director for all basketball assets in Canada. You know, what that entailed was managing sponsorship deals for high school, college, university. And at the time, the Grizzlies and the Raptors was managing those endorsement deals, and Canada Basketball, the Federation. And really parlayed that into moving to the U.S. and working for Nike Inc., which is different from Canada, but really being more focused on working with NBA players and what all that entailed. You know, from there, obviously joined the Raptors, moved back home, and, you know, here I am today.
Yeah, and so you mentioned that kind of trajectory there. Even going back to growing up and playing the game, what do you remember about the perception of basketball, just the sport in Canada, from when you were growing up? And, you know, you mentioned the Grizzlies and the Raptors in the mid-90s, you know, the NBA laying ground there. What do you remember about that perception from when you first started playing and how it evolved over the course of time?
I think it's no secret that Canada, you know, Toronto, it's really a hockey town. So growing up in that environment, you know, it was hockey first, you know, maybe the CFL and then basketball. So it was really, it really wasn't on the map. You know, I credit Vince Carter for really putting Canada and basketball in Toronto on the map. You know, fortunately, you know, I consider Vince a friend today. You know, we met way back when I was managing his Nike stuff when I was with Nike. So it really wasn't on the map. You know, it was all about hockey, and, you know, I have nothing against hockey. I'm actually a hockey fan. I'm a diehard Leaf fan, suffering since 1967 in our last cup. But no, I mean, basketball was an afterthought, and to watch where the game has grown and gotten to today has been unbelievable. It's incredible.
How would you describe the state of the game in Canada now, grassroots wise and even nationally? And I would start just by asking that. How would you describe the state of it now?
I think it's definitely on an upswing. You know, coming off of their championship from a couple of years ago, what the Raptors did, and just, you know, they captivated the minds of, you know, millions of people north of the border. You know, it's something they should definitely be proud of. You know, as a Canadian, I was proud to see them win, even though I wanted to, you know, beat them down in game seven when I was with the Sixers.
I was going to ask if you were still with Philly. That's kind of painful. Yeah,
it was painful. I was in the stands in the Air Canada Center the night when Kawhi hit that incredible shot. I was right there. But, you know, to see 19,800 rabid fans, and, you know, there was a part of me that I was like, you know what, this is pretty damn cool. And the country just kind of, they went with it. And, you know, what they've been able to do with the game of basketball at the grassroots level is incredible. You look at the number of Canadians who are in the NBA today, I think it's 20 plus, is definitely a reflection of how the game has grown. And, you know, I think this is only the beginning. I think, you know, they're definitely one of the better teams in the world in terms of basketball talent. They've got a great head coach, you know, and being part of, you know, that program going forward is something that I'm really looking forward to.
Do you think of it as sort of a point of culmination of stuff that you've done over, you know, a certain span of years, or is it something that kind of just came around in recent years? You've thought about getting involved in a leadership position there. Like, is it something that has always been on your bucket list, or is it something that's just kind of popped into your head as you've moved along?
No, it's definitely been on my bucket list. I've always wanted to be involved with Canada basketball at some level. You know, this just feels like the right time to kind of, you know, join the federation. You know, I've done a lot of great things in my career, and, you know, I just feel like this is something that's, you know, the timing's pretty good. I think that I've got a ton of experience that I can share with people on the board. There's people who I know who are on the board, and there's people who I don't know. You know, I'm looking to learn what they bring and what they'll provide, and I'm looking to share my wealth of knowledge that I have as well. So
yeah, and specifically on that, I went back and listened before we talked to a sit down you did with KC at the beginning when you first hired by the Bulls, and you mentioned something about loving to grow the game kind of at every stop that you've been at. It's not, when you say it's on an upswing, it sounds like you still think there is room for it to grow. What specifically do you think you can bring in that department in addition to what you've already done for Canada basketball to have it continue to grow?
You know, somebody in my position, you know, I've got a story to tell. You know, as I kind of walked you through my career, I don't know if there's any NBA GMs who started working in a Nike factory outlet store, you know, 20 years ago. You know, if I can touch one or two little kids and let them know that it's possible to achieve what I've achieved from where I've started, then that's a win. You know, I played college basketball in the U.S. You know, I've had people come scout me with, you know, visions of me potentially joining their NBA franchise. If I can touch one or two little kids and let them know that it's possible for them to do the same, then, you know, I've done my job. You know, the game is still growing. You know, it's not perfect. I've got ideas about, you know, ways to grow the game in Canada. And, you know, now that I have this type of platform, you know, it's really on me to kind of share those ideas and see if we can institute some change.
Last one for you, Mark. And again, we really appreciate your time. You mentioned the relationship aspect. You talked about that a lot when you were hired with the Bulls. How much do you think that, you know, the start that you had at Nike Canada, where you mentioned not only the, you know, logistical experience that you gain running your own shop and kind of moving up, but also the relationships you build, whether it be that skill being ingrained in you or actually, you know, specific relationships that you've developed and maintained over time, how much do you think that's helped you as you've moved throughout the NBA? And then as a second part to that, how much do you think it will continue to kind of help you as you're with the Bulls? I would imagine you would say it's been a huge part of year one, but looking forward to.
No, it's a huge part of who I am as a person, you know, as a father, as a husband. I mean, you know, you got to have great relationships. You know, it's something that we practice every single day right here in this building. It's what I'm rooted in. It's something that my parents instilled in me is, you know, you have to treat people well. And, you know, in order to build solid relationships, you have to treat people well. In order to build trust, you have to treat people well. And it's something that I firmly believe in. It's how we want to grow this program is rooted in relationships and working with really great people, not only talented players, but, you know, players of high character. And, you know, relationships is something that I've started with and it'll always be with me. And again, as we grow this program, whether we bring in, you know, coaches or trainers or performance people, staff, they're going to be great people. They're going to be people who are hardworking, and you can't find those people unless you have great relationships.
And I know there's a qualifying tournament, I believe, coming up for Canada basketball. Is that right? In later this month, what's your involvement going to be with that? Will you be there? What can we expect in terms of what to look forward to in the immediate future with the Olympics coming up this summer?
Yeah, so there's a qualifying tournament coming up. I believe it starts the beginning of July. I'm hoping to attend, but because of the quarantine rules that they have going on in Canada right now, you know, you have a 14-day quarantine if you enter into Canada. Not sure if I'm going to be able to dedicate 14 days to quarantine with all the great things that we have coming up this summer in terms of team building and those types of activities. But, you know, if I don't get to go, I'll definitely be watching from afar and monitoring, you know, Team Canada's progress.
All right, Mark. Well, again, we appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping in and taking a minute to talk with us. And best of luck with everything going forward with the offseason and ahead of that.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.